It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. This hour, GOP proposals in our state legislature that affect nearly every aspect of Iowa's weapons laws. Joining me on this legislative Monday, Joyce Russell, IPR State House correspondent at the State House Law Library. Hello, Joyce.
Hello.
We have a couple of lawmakers. We have other people standing by to give us various perspectives on these changes. But I understand there's even been some activity on these proposals this morning. What's the latest?
Well, there was a news conference here at the Capitol this morning with the mayor of Pleasant Hill, police chief of the city of Des Moines, expressing their concerns about the bill, about the stand your ground portions of the bill, and also the portions of the bill that would no longer require weapons permits.
Mm-hmm. Walk through a few of the proposals. There are several of them that make up these law changes, preempting local ordinances that restrict firearm use, adding so-called stand-your-ground provisions, which are enacted in many states across the country, instituting lifetime permits to carry, and allowing minors to use handguns while under adult supervision, children under 14 years old. Did I miss any, Joyce? There are a couple of others, aren't there?
Those are the main provisions. One part that hasn't been reported on very much is the whole issue of permits. Currently, under certain situations, you are required to have a permit to carry a weapon. There are different rules whether you're in the city or outside of the city, whether you can carry it openly or carry it concealed. There's also required permit to acquire a weapon, and neither of these would any longer be required. The city folks, the police folks, think that will have an effect on the number of people carrying weapons openly. But the other concern from gun safety advocates is that this will, in effect, eliminate required background checks for private purchases of handguns.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we want to reach out to our listeners this hour. We're hearing more in depth about these proposals. Tell us, what are your questions? Do you support the proposed changes that we're going to be talking about this hour? 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100. You can email us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org, or tweet us at IPR Talk. With Joyce at the State House Law Library, Representative Matt Winschittle is with us, a Republican of Missouri Valley. Welcome to you, Representative Winschittle.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be back.
Representative Mary Wolf with us as well, a Democrat of Clinton. Representative Wolf, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Mary Wolf is a top Democrat on the House Judiciary Committee, a member of the House Public Safety Committee. Representative Winschittle is spearheading the drafting of this comprehensive firearms bill this year. Let's have you start off with what is at the top of the list here for you as far as the importance here, the state preemption, the stand your ground. Which would you like to talk about first?
Well, I think the bill as a whole is very important to Iowans, and I think that the base premise behind this is to expand Iowans' freedoms and protect their Second Amendment rights, open up their opportunities that have currently been well restricted by state government. I think some of the most important things in here would deal with allowing a parent to be able to make the decision when they should teach their children proper handgun safety. Some of the other portions in here that deal with the renewal of permits and how permits are issued, that's of great importance. If you had to ask me to pick one over the other, I probably couldn't do it because these are all very near and dear to my heart, and I believe that these are all good proposals moving forward.
Well, maybe we can start with the state preemption. This is where the state would preempt local authorities, local ordinances from restricting firearm use. I understand private businesses under this bill would still be able to restrict firearms on their property. We see the signs of store owners and so forth. No firearms, please, in this establishment. Also an exemption here, K-12 schools. But, for example, our colleges and universities, our state universities, the Regents universities, the public universities, would not be able to declare campuses gun-free zones. Also city, county buildings not be able to do so either. Tell us a little bit about the thinking behind this, Representative Winschittle.
Okay, let's clear one thing up. Right now, Iowa already has preemption on the books. In Chapter 724.28, we have prohibition of regulation by political subdivisions. This is the law of the land and has been so since 1990. political subdivisions of the state are not authorized to enact ordinances that prohibit the free carrying of firearms. The reason that some folks have thought that they can do this is back in 2010, right after we passed the Shall Issue Bill, Attorney General Tom Miller sent a letter to county attorneys stating that they could not pass ordinances prohibiting firearm carrying, but that they could pass resolutions in order to achieve the same accomplishment, which, quite frankly, circumvents state law. What we're doing with the proposal now is to move us forward, making sure that we're not having a patchwork of regulations across the state where Iowans could be driving from Harrison County, Iowa to Dubuque County, Iowa, and not know where they're actually lawfully carrying a firearm. Now, as far as carrying on college campuses, that was part of the original proposal, but I have an amendment before me that will change that and allow those colleges to be able to make a decision based upon their needs of their students to establish firearms regulations on their universities and their campuses. That amendment has come about because I listened to constituents back home. I heard legislators down here in Des Moines who said that was a concern of theirs. So that is an amendment that will be incorporated into the bill.
What were the concerns specifically on that point? Were colleges and universities it sounds like it's changed your mind there that you would support this amendment. What was the specific concern that made you be able to support that amendment?
I wouldn't say it's changed my mind. I still believe that adults who are attending our colleges and universities have an individual fundamental right to carry firearms. But in order for the bill to move forward, some of the concerns that I heard were about the immaturity of folks at an 18 or 19-year-old level at some of those universities, and they wanted the universities and the college presidents to be able to make that decision for their campuses. So it hasn't changed my mind, but in order to move this legislation forward, I'm willing to make changes in order to accomplish that.
Representative Mary Wolf, a Democrat of Clinton, you're with us on this conversation. So many facets of this, we haven't been able to go through them in depth yet, just the one that was just described about preempting local ordinances with some exceptions there. React to this slew of changes as a whole and then perhaps to the preempting local ordinances part of it.
Sure. So this bill is, what it really is 12 smaller gun bills that have been combined, and we've dealt with several of the individual divisions, the individual baby bills, in the House over the past two terms. And I will say that all of those bills that were run in the past individually were able to gain bipartisan support. They passed the House with bipartisan votes, and that was partly because we were given the opportunity to vet the bills, to discuss them with Representative Windschuttle, to work on the language together before we were forced to vote on them. So there are still a lot of things in HSB 133 that I support, and I think that other members of my caucus would support. The problem is that it also includes some really big policy changes that we haven't had a chance to vet, and it also includes Division 10, which deals with a overhaul of Chapter 704, which is Iowa's current justification self-defense law, and with all due respect to whoever drafted it, I think it's drafted extremely poorly. I don't think it does what it's intended to do, and I think it would make it very difficult for prosecutors to convict a lot of guilty people, which, you know, perhaps that was the intent of the bill, but I doubt it. So I'm happy to hear that Representative Windschuttle has listened to one of the criticisms of the bill and was willing to respond to that. There are quite a few other criticisms that I believe are valid and that I would like to work with him on. However, we do have a funnel coming right up, so I doubt that we'll be able to get that done prior to being required to vote on it in judiciary. So I'm disappointed that a bill of this magnitude that is proposing such major policy changes, for example, doing away with mandatory permits, that we weren't given more of an opportunity both to work on it as it was being put together and also to discuss the bill, to ask questions of experts. We had a committee meeting, a subcommittee meeting, in which we weren't able to ask any questions because we spent the hour taking input from the public, which on the one hand was good. On the other hand, that's usually what we do in a public hearing, not a sub. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I'm hopeful that there still may be some opportunity for amendments, for compromise, and I guess we'll just have to see.
Okay. Perhaps, Joyce, we can move on to one of the other aspects of this bill that's been much talked about, the Stand Your Ground provision. We know of this from many other parts of the country, I think first enacted in, 2005 in Florida. This, broadly speaking, correct me if I'm wrong, but removes the duty to retreat before using force in self-defense, Representative Windschuttle. So you can be threatened by someone if you reasonably believe that that your action will, using even lethal force, will prevent death or great bodily harm. You can do that? Is that basically the intent behind Stand Your Ground?
The base premise behind Stand Your Ground is to ensure that a citizen who is ever faced with one of those dire situations is able to defend themselves or someone that is nearby if they are acting reasonably and they do not have a duty to retreat. So if this were to go before a judge or a jury, the jury instructions would not include that they had to first consider if they could run away from that situation.
Mm-hmm.
Keep in mind, the way that we've crafted this language, I understand Representative Wolf and I may disagree on the actual aspects of the language, but it is to make sure that folks are acting reasonably. So this is not vigilantism. This is not authorizing anybody to go out and pull a weapon on anybody else and just blow them away because they were scared of them. This is crafted in a way to make sure that it is one of those dire situations where someone's life is threatened.
Just to clarify, the other controversial part of that is that it spells out that a person may be wrong in their estimation of the danger or the force necessary to repel the danger so long as they act reasonably in response to their belief. And we're going to be hearing, I believe, a little later from an African-American woman from Des Moines, one of the African-American Iowans who spoke out on this last week. They believe that merely being black sometimes communicates danger or creates fear, and that this is going to harm them. I know Representative Windschuttle, you spent a long time with those folks after that subcommittee. What are you telling them to alleviate their fears?
We actually had a very good conversation, and I expressed to them exactly what the bill will do as it's laid out. And in the course of that conversation, I made it very clear, this is not targeted towards any one specific group or sector in Iowa. This is for all Iowans. This is to provide the protection for anybody who finds themselves in a potentially very risky or life-threatening situation to be able to stand their ground if they so choose. It just removes that duty to retreat. I also brought up to them the case of J. Rodney Lewis, who did stand his ground a few years ago in Des Moines, ended up spending 112 days in Polk County lockup, lost all of his possessions, and at the end of it, he's acquitted, and the folks in the trial said, well, the jury system worked. Well, it didn't work for him to spend 112 days in jail. He was being attacked by two other people. He stood his ground, and yet he ended up losing all of his earthly possessions because he was in lockup and couldn't post bail. That is a travesty of justice, and that's the type of protection that we're trying to put in place so those type of things don't happen again.
Well, one of the things that the police chiefs were pointing out in the news conference this morning, I believe a Democratic legislator also made this point, that in Florida, the number of justifiable homicides doubled after they passed Stand Your Ground. Is that a legitimate concern about this?
You know, I've heard that specific topic thrown out, that whenever a state has passed Stand Your Ground laws, that their homicide rate has gone up.
Justifiable homicide was what
Well, most of the time people have said they're homicide, right? They haven't used the terms justifiable. However, you know, we heard similar things about doom and gloom when we passed Shall Issue in 2010. People said there was going to be blood in the streets and we were going to have vigilante justice. We're now 6-7 years later. We've got over 260,000 Iowans that have a permit to carry weapons, and I have yet for someone to bring before me a case where someone has erroneously abused the law under the permit to carry weapons system. Iowans are reasonable, responsible people. What we're trying to do with this law, this proposal, is to allow them the opportunity to make the decision for themselves without having to first try and find a place to run away.
Let's talk with Laurel Clinton. Add her name, her voice to this conversation with Representative Matt Windschuttle and Representative Mary Wolf. Joyce Russell with us as well as we talk about a dozen or so changes in Iowa's gun laws, including the Stand Your Ground provisions. We're just discussing that right now. Laurel Clinton is with us, a Des Moines resident. Also, Laurel, hi, you are a gun owner?
I actually own a permit, so I'd like to clarify that. I don't actually own a gun. I've taken the class, and I do have a permit to carry concealed.
Okay. You are you were mentioned earlier by Joyce. You are an African-American, important in this context, of course, with the tensions we've been and the events that we've had in our country over the last few years. You have concerns about the Stand Your Ground provision. Explain what your concerns are.
I absolutely do, and I don't believe that the bill was written in malice against anyone in particular, but it just so happens that I fear because highly trained gun or police officers who are trained in gun safety, who are making poor choices when it comes to the African-American community, and it just struck me as the way this bill is written, especially for the Stand Your Ground portion. It concerns me. I have three African-American male sons. And so when you look at what's going on in society, we're targeted. It's unfortunate, but that's the way I feel as a mother.
Do you have examples, Laurel, there in Des Moines where you or your sons have felt targeted?
Absolutely. I'm saying I live in the heart of urban city. You can't get any more urban where we live. And as I told the representative last week, my sons look like that person that is always targeted. They can't walk around the perimeter of my house. It's on the corner of University in the heart of the city in Des Moines without the police stopping and harassing them. So they look like that suspect even though they're good kids. They go to college. They go to school. You know what I'm saying? They don't have criminal backgrounds. But if you look at my child, you don't know that.
Mm-hmm.
If he's coming to assist you, you don't know that he's not coming to attack you. So to have that reasonable, if you feel like it's reasonable to shoot somebody, I'm just not ready for that in Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
I've lived here my entire life. I'm not ready for supposedly reasonable citizens to be able to make that judgment call. I think if you can retreat, do retreat.
Representative Winchell, what do you say to those concerns by the Des Moines resident Laurel Clinton?
Well, we had a very good conversation last Thursday, and I would say the same thing today that I said then. This applies equally to all Iowans. So for that person that might be threatened because there's someone of color in the room or they've got some preconceived notion about how people are or how they act, this would provide the same type of protection for that person that someone has a misconception about if that person started to come after them as being an aggressor. So it provides the same protections for them as it does for everybody else. It's a two-way street. I don't think there's anything that we can do within this legislation or within any legislation of this topic that's going to be able to get us past some of the racial problems and tensions that we still have in this country, unfortunately.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Representative Wolf, do you see that there could be language here that's better crafted that would satisfy all parties or most of the parties here when we talk about reasonable action in the face of a threat?
Well, to some extent, the law as it's written now, the duty to retreat is extremely narrow, and it only applies if you can do so with absolutely no risk to yourself or anyone else. So I almost wouldn't have a problem with basically removing the last sentence of 704.11, which is the only place in code where that duty to retreat is even mentioned. The problem with the bill is that it doesn't just address that. It makes a lot of changes to the way that we define reasonable force and what constitutes a crime for which deadly force is authorized. And the biggest concern I have is that currently deadly force is specifically authorized for forcible felonies. The bill amends that specific code section so as to authorize the use of deadly force for all felonious, all felony assaults, but it includes all felony burglaries. That includes burglary third. Burglary third is breaking into a storage shed to steal some tools. It's sneaking into somebody's detached garage to take an old bike. And so, you know, I know the discussion is going to be, well, you still have to be reasonable. The problem is there would be lots of situations in which the only way you could terminate a robbery or a burglary third is by shooting the young man who's trying to ride away on your bike. So should you do that? Is that reasonable? No, but under this bill, it absolutely authorized the use of deadly force in order to terminate or prevent a burglary third. And if that's not what the bill meant to do, and I don't think it is, then that needs to be addressed. And to be honest, that's where I have one of the biggest concerns for our young African Americans, in that if they, you know, if they happen to be hanging around somebody's garage or storage shed, you're allowed to use deadly force to prevent a burglary third if you have reason to believe that one's going to take place. So it's, that's an example of a drafting issue, which I don't necessarily think was intended, but it's there. There's several more. I could go on. But as it's written now, it is extremely problematic. And as a criminal defense attorney, I work with this chapter on a regular basis. And yes, it needs some updates, but something like this that is so broad and makes so many major policy changes is, this isn't good law.
And Representative Wolf, I've got to jump in here. I respect what you're saying. And as always, you know, we've worked together for years. I'm willing to take a close eye or take a close look at this and potentially make some of those changes that you're suggesting in order to get to the underlying intent. But there's nothing in this bill that authorizes someone to shoot someone in the back after they've stolen their bicycle from leaning up against the shed and riding down the street. That's not reasonable. And if that went before a judge or a jury, there's no jury in Iowa that's going to say that someone was justified in stopping that robbery by shooting someone in the back. That's not what this law does.
Well, I mean, then why include burglary third in the list of offenses which are specifically for which you specifically authorize deadly force? And I'm just saying that is how that would be interpreted. So I don't, I mean, there's other issues. I would like to say about Mr. Lewis, that is the only case I've asked, you know, is this a problem? Are people being convicted who were just defending themselves? Are people being wrongly prosecuted? And Mr. Lewis is a case that keeps getting brought up. A, he was found not guilty based on a jury applying current law to the facts in that case. So certainly as far as being able to protect his right to use reasonable force, the law as it is worked. B, the reason he sat in jail was a bad combination of an overreaching prosecutor, a bond system in Polk County that has now been revamped, and also there were two eyewitnesses who lied. So.
Representative Wolf and Representative Winschoed, a lot to discuss here. We understand. Please stay with us for the second half hour as we discuss the comprehensive rewrite of Iowa's firearms laws. Representative Matt Winschoed with us, Representative Mary Wolf, and also Laurel Clinton is with us, a Des Moines resident, permit holder, and also concerned about especially Stand Your Ground, the changes on that. We want to have you join our conversation when we return, 1-866-780-9100. I'm Ben Kiefer, back with more of River to River, back with Joyce Russell in just a moment. And we're back midstream in this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer with IPR State House correspondent Joyce Russell. It's a legislative Monday. We're examining a comprehensive gun bill making its way through the State House. Representative Matt Winschoed, Republican of Missouri Valley, is with it. He's spearheaded the drafting of this comprehensive firearms bill. Representative Mary Wolf, a Democrat of Clinton, is with us as well. We said goodbye to Laurel Clinton. She was a Des Moines resident who expressed some concerns about the Stand Your Ground part. We've been asking our listeners to please join us, 1-866-780-9100. And just want to let everyone know we have a lot of interest on our phone lines and otherwise, people wanting to get their perspectives, and we'll do our best to get as many perspectives in this half hour as we talk about a multifaceted bill with lots of new ideas here. Let's talk also with Nathan Gibson. He's been on our program before. He's at the State House Law Library as well. Nathan, welcome back to our program.
Thank you, sir. Thanks for having me on.
You live in Johnston. You're a gun rights advocate, and you're from a hunting family. We had you on before when you talked about your daughters, teaching them to use firearms safely, and you're a big backer of one of the facets here that would allow minors, actually under 14-year-olds, to use handguns while under adult supervision. Why do we need that?
So a couple things. Probably the first is Iowa is the only state in the nation that has this restriction. So my daughters and other youth can participate in competitive sport shooting, and parents can teach their children's gun safety in 49 other states. But Iowa, for some reason, has this restriction on the books. So for me, the biggest thing is obviously I want to be able to teach my kids gun safety because I have firearms in the house and not be a felon in the process. But more importantly, this is my daughter's sport. This is something they have a passion for, and something that currently I have to drive to Illinois, of all places, for them to participate in their sport.
Nathan, is there any low-end limit to this? I mean, a 10-year-old, an 8-year-old, a 6-year-old, is there any low-end restriction?
Here's the deal. A reasonable parent is not going to give a firearm to a child who's under certain age, right?
Right, but I'm talking about the law. What would this new law permit? Not any reasonable parent, but could I have my 8-year-old or my 6-year-old handle a weapon if I was supervising and shoot at a shooting range?
Yeah, absolutely. There's the way the law is written right now, there is no age limit. It brings the current law, it brings pistols into standard with the current law, which states that a child can hold a long rifle or a shotgun at any age. It just strikes the provision that, for whatever reason, is limiting pistols. So it's just bringing current law or pistols into standard with the current law on firearms and long guns. Mm-hmm. Sorry, long guns and rifles.
Nathan, do you believe this makes our state safer?
Absolutely, right? We want to teach our kids firearm safety. We want to be able to talk to our kids about both the dangers and the sport aspects of using firearms. So if we make it illegal for parents to do that, obviously parents aren't going to be able to teach your kids firearm safety and kill the curiosity, so to speak, right? So that was the main reason I started doing this, and how my children got into sport shooting is because I didn't want them to be curious of the gun, to pick one up when I wasn't around and over at a friend's house. So, fortunately, no one knew about the law at the time, and I am not a felon, but now I can't do it because most people obviously know that this is Iowa law. Remember, farmers across the country, the majority of Iowans do not even know this is the law, and they take their kids in the back to a .22 revolver, and they're felons, and they don't even know it.
Nathan Gibson with us, a Johnston gun owner there, explaining his backing of one of the provisions in the comprehensive gun bill going through the Iowa legislature. Also at the State House Law Library with us, a final guest at the Law Library to introduce, Amber Gustafson is the leader of the Iowa chapter of Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America. Welcome, Amber.
Hi, thank you for having me on today.
I understand there are several provisions of the bill that your group finds concerning. Tell us.
Yes, there are several things that stand out to us as things that we really question whether they're needed in Iowa. Ones that really are of special concern to us would be anything that has to do with removing background checks on handgun sales, or anything that does away with the permitting process. So those are the things that we're really focusing on right now, but there are certainly other aspects of the bill that we are extremely concerned about as well.
Mm-hmm. And Amber, specifically, does this bill do that, eliminate background checks to the degree that we have them now? Do you see that in the bill?
Well, I am not an attorney. I am a volunteer, and I am a mom from Ankeny, and so I leave the sticky legal questions to the attorneys and the legislators in the room.
Okay.
But I have seen things that definitely do concern me because, for example, Missouri, our neighbor to the south and a place where my husband and I lived a few years ago, we have seen many of the types of changes that are being proposed in the omnibus bill right now. And it has had a detrimental effect in the state of Missouri. And I'm a person who cares very deeply about law enforcement and safety of our law enforcement community. And we do know that removing background checks on all handgun sales, states that that's the law of the land, have 53% more cops that are killed in the line of duty with guns. So that's extremely concerning to me and definitely not a direction that I want my state to go in.
A representative of the Iowa Department of Public Safety clarified that part of the bill for me. It does, as I said before, it eliminates the permit to acquire, and it makes voluntary, no longer mandatory, a permit to carry. And so, and both of those are avenues by which background checks occur for private gun sales. So according to the Department of Public Safety, indirectly then it would eliminate those background checks for private gun sales. Representative Winchittle, how do you address that concern about the elimination of background checks?
Okay, I've got to state this very clearly so everyone can hear it. This does not eliminate background checks. I'll say it again. This bill does not eliminate background checks.
Let me clarify, Representative Winchittle. For private, according to the Department of Public Safety, for private gun sales, it would eliminate background checks because these permits would no longer be required, or required to have those background checks. Federally licensed gun dealers, of course, would still require a background check. So you just disagree with the DPS?
I disagree with the way that this is being interpreted. Because of the way that we're moving to a lifetime permit potentially within this bill, the permit to acquire becomes redundant. So the elimination of the permit to acquire actually moves us forward in having more people go through more background checks more often. Right now in Iowa, you can get a permit to acquire that's valid for 1 year. It's printed on a piece of paper that anybody could print up on their computer at home and make it fraudulently if they really wanted to. You can then go down to an FFL dealer and point of sale. You can buy as many firearms as you want, pistols, revolvers, long guns, under that permit to acquire, okay? What we're doing with this, and at that point of sale, you never go through another NICS background check. What we're doing with this, with the elimination of the permit to acquire, anytime someone goes to an FFL dealer and does a point of sale...
FFL is a federally
federal firearms license.
Okay.
Yes. Anytime they go to your Shields or your Double Barrel Shooter Supply, which is a family gun shop back home, any of those places... they would then be required to do the NICS instant background check on every purchase of every firearm, okay? So the person-to-person aspect of this, currently the law says that if you're going to sell a pistol or revolver to someone, that you have to at least verify or try and verify that they've had a permit to acquire. Anybody that has ill intent could fraudulently print up a permit to acquire. The way we reword it in this bill is that that person needs to know or reasonably should know that that person is not prohibited from having a firearm. And if they don't do that, it can be a Class D felony. So as we're moving forward, we're actually putting a further restriction on this to make sure the people are doing their diligence. Me as a personal, as a individual citizen, if I'm going to sell a firearm to somebody and I want to make sure that I am completely covered, I'm going to take that firearm to an FFL dealer, have them run the next background check before I transfer it to anybody else. That's the way that we, citizens can be protected with this.
And the lifetime permit, that's still optional though, right? A lifetime permit?
The lifetime permit would be optional. And keep in mind, once that permit, after the five-year window on that permit goes invalid, every time a person would purchase a firearm after that at an FFL dealer, they're going through that background check at that point of sale, that NICS background check that's mandated by the federal government.
Let me break in here and remind our listeners who perhaps have just joined us that we're talking about a comprehensive gun bill at the Iowa legislature. With us, Representative Matt Winchittle, Republican of Missouri Valley, Representative Mary Wolfe, a Democrat of Clinton, also Amber Gustafson, of the Iowa chapter of Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America, and we have Nathan Gibson, a Johnston gun owner and a father of competition shooters, sport shooters, daughters who like to compete in gun shooting competitions. I'd like to get some callers in here. We have a lot of interest here via email. Also, our callers. Let's go to Megan in Ankeny. Megan is no longer there. Evidently, we were too long in waiting there. Let's go to this question from Paul via email. Will this bill permit a permit holder to enter a government building with a weapon such as a courtroom? Representative Winchittle.
Yes. Can you please restate the question?
Will this bill permit a permit holder to enter a government building with a weapon enter a courtroom, Paul emails, for example?
The way that I've crafted the amendment, the current bill as it stands, no. A court or a judge could put a prohibition on carrying into a courtroom or areas that are primarily used by the court. The amendment that I have that makes changes for just like the community colleges and universities, courtrooms and government buildings would be treated the same way. If they're going to provide 100% protection and security, then they're going to also be able to assume liability and put a firearm prohibition in that location. That's part of the amendment that I will propose before we move the bill out of committee.
Marianne is with us in Ames. Thanks for calling in. Marianne, are you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you for taking my call. There's a lot in this that really disturbs me. In fact, it creates tremendous anxiety when I think about it. The first thing I want to point out, whenever somebody talks about Second Amendment rights. We want to expand Second Amendment rights. The Second Amendment states a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right to keep and bear arms should not be infringed. Every time I hear gun rights talking about Second Amendment, they forget about the fact it starts by saying a well-regulated militia. And we have that. We have at the local level, you have your police department on the ISU campus. You've got security there. Expand that, the county level, et cetera. We have well-regulated militias throughout our whole society. I'm not opposed to people having guns, but I think we need to have common-sense gun laws. And there is a lot that is not common sense in this. The other thing I want to point out is I have students, I have young children that will be on the Iowa State campus next year. They do not want guns on that campus. And I would bet if you polled the majority of the students there, they would say, no, we want a gun-free zone. You have a few people who are really into guns that want it. That's not an appropriate place to have it. There are places that guns are okay. A campus is not a place to have guns. And I hope that people will slow down with this and let's really think through the consequences. There's so much legislation getting pushed right now that we're not thinking through the consequences of every single thing that we're asking for. But again, let's get back to my original thing. The Second Amendment states a well-regulated militia in order to protect society.
Marianne, thank you very much. Perhaps a brief response from Representative Winschittle. The courts, of course, have interpreted our Second Amendment rights in a way that provides what?
The Supreme Court has actually come down in two separate decisions and found that the Second Amendment applies to the individual. If you look at the amendment as in its entirety, the Second Amendment, the Bill of Rights, a well-regulated militia being necessary to a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms should not be infringed. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Our own Supreme Court in recent history has found that that is absolutely applicable to the individual person to have firearms. And if you go back and you actually look at some of the founding documents and understand why the founding fathers wrote the Second Amendment that way, they were enshrining in our Constitution what is a fundamental right of self-preservation. The best way to have self-preservation is to equalize the playing field. The Second Amendment does that.
Okay. Let me throw in this email from Virginia in the interest of getting as many perspectives as possible in the remaining minutes. Virginia writes to us to say the bill is not intended to target African Americans may be true, but it's pretty easy to see how African Americans can be more easily targeted. I think it's important to listen to the African American community in our state during these troubled times. A lot of people experience more suspicion and danger just because of their skin color. White people, like me, writes Virginia, take for granted our freedom to walk around without experiencing that kind of danger. Marty emailing. Marty saying it is intellectually dishonest for your conservative guest to gloss over the data that shows doubling murder rates in other states with stand-your-ground laws. Iowa is not a magical place where people are especially reasonable and free from implicit biases. He should be asked to respond specifically to why he feels Iowa will be different, a different case, as well as explain the spike in the murder rates in other states. Representative Winschittle, that's directed at you.
I can't explain the homicide rates in other states, but as far as the question about why I think Iowans are different, because we're reasonable, responsible people. I heard some of these same arguments and some of these same concerns from folks when we passed Shall Issue Law in 2010, and those things never came about. They were never found to be true. All we're doing is allowing Iowans to make decisions for themselves on when they want to defend themselves and not put them in a position where they've got to put the farm up in a legal defense when someone tries to take them to court over it.
Okay, we have about 5 minutes left in this conversation with the many facets of this omnibus bill. Where do we see this going? Mary Wolf, I've actually gotten turned back to you. We haven't heard from you for a little while. The Democrats, of course, not in the driver's seat in either the House or the Senate in our legislature. Where do you see this going? Do you feel you get a fair hearing and there will be some amendments here? Or will it be rushed through and you'll be disappointed on some aspects?
I think that is entirely up to the majority party. Certainly, I wasn't able to ask any questions during the one subcommittee that we had on this bill, and my understanding is we're running this out of committee on Wednesday, so maybe I can ask questions then. Would like to just a couple of things. One, this bill absolutely reduces the number of mandatory background checks that people would have to get. It does away with the mandatory background check. It comes along with obtaining a permit to carry, and it does away with the mandatory background check that's required to purchase a handgun from a private party. So it does say that if you know or have reason to know a person is not eligible to possess a gun, you can't sell it to them, but it doesn't create any duty on the part of the person doing the selling to do anything to find out. So if anything, it encourages the seller not to ask any questions and not to run somebody's background. The other thing is there's so many people who do not know that they are legally ineligible to possess a firearm. It's very complicated. The rules governing who can or who can't, I'm a lawyer and I don't think I know them all. So people who had a mental health adjudication when they were 14 cannot legally possess a firearm. People who had an old, you know, disorderly conduct, but the person, the victim was a spouse, they can't. So hundreds of people who apply for permits are turned down by DPS because they have a disability that they had no idea about until they got the background check. Under this bill, people in good faith will carry a firearm in public who are committing a Class D felony under federal and state law. And that's not good. We're setting people up to break the law. And again, should they know these things? Maybe. But, you know, Mr. Gibson wasn't aware that it was a crime to allow his children to use a handgun.
Okay.
And so that's a problem.
Representative Wolf, we're running out of time. Please, a brief response to that, Matt Winchittle.
I appreciate what Representative Wolf is saying, but I think a lot of folks don't fully understand how firearms transactions work when you go to an FFL dealer. If you do not have a permit, you have to go through a background check. It is federally mandated. So every time you go to a point of sale on an FFL, you're going through a background check. As far as the language about a person-to-person sale, we have crafted it in a way that someone has to know or reasonably should know that person does not have a firearm prohibition. If somebody transfers that firearm and that firearm gets used in the commission of a crime, they're coming back to that person who previously owned it, and they're going to get charged with a Class D felony. I guarantee it.
Okay.
Representative Winchell, I want you to address something that the police officers were talking about in the news conference this morning. Without a required permit to carry a weapon, whether concealed or open, they're concerned that there will be more open carrying of weapons. The Des Moines police chief said we already get calls about people openly carrying weapons. This is just going to explode with that. What do you say about that concern?
I say that there is a large misunderstanding across the state of Iowa, including with law enforcement. I respect them for all they do and the job that they, the service they provide to all Iowans. Iowa is not a concealed carry state. We have never been a concealed carry state. Anybody that has a permit, of the 267,000 Iowans that currently possess a permit to carry, they could all open carry right now anywhere in the state.
Not in urban areas.
Yes, ma'am, they can. Yes, ma'am. Iowa has never been a concealed carry state. So even if someone wants to have a permit to carry right now and carry in urban areas, they absolutely can. That is permissible under state law as it's currently written. And
well, according to the Department of Public Safety, a permit is required within the limits of any city to go armed with a pistol or revolver or any loaded firearm of any kind, whether concealed or not.
That is current law, because the way that law was written was if you were outside of the incorporated limits, you never had to have a permit, but you had to carry openly. Our permit to carry authorizes every person that has that permit to carry openly or concealed. It circumvents that.
Okay, so much to talk about, and we have a lot of callers on the line. We'll have to disappoint in this case because we've run out of time. I wanted to mention, let me throw in one more email from Adam, who's been listening this hour. Adam saying, obviously a teacher, I guess, or a professor, perhaps. I do not want my students to have guns in my classroom, writes Adam. Like a waiter at a restaurant who should not have to do their job at the risk of getting lung cancer from smoking, I should not have to do it my job with students packing a deadly weapon. A lot of perspectives here. We've heard a few of them, a smattering, big, comprehensive bill here with many facets, and we've talked about a few of them. Thank you very much for joining us, Representative Matt Winchittle of Missouri Valley, Representative Mary Wolf of Clinton, Nathan Gibson, and Amber Gustafson. Thank you very much for joining us. A very complex bill, lots of opinions here. Perhaps we'll be revisiting this in the future. And as always, Joyce Russell, it's good to have you at my side here. Iowa Public Radio Statehouse correspondent. Thank you.
Okay.
River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury and Lindsay Moon. Help today from Chelsea Hoy. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. We always welcome your comments and questions about this program. You can contact us at any time. Our email, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.